clerk will call the docket.
Sheila D. Brace, trustee, et cetera, against Linda Lee Johnson, Fairfax County Government. George R. A. Dumar, Kelly M. Albasi, appellate, David B. Ross, Dean County Attorney, Elizabeth E. Cooper, Deputy County Attorney,
May it please the court, my name is Kelly Budd, and I represent the appellant, Sheila E. Frace, trustee of the Sheila E. Frace Trust. I'd be asking to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Did you say two?
Two.
Right.
We are here this morning, Your Honor, on the very narrow issue of whether the Fairfax County Circuit Court erred in dismissing Mrs. Frace's writ petition to the Circuit Court, appealing a Zoning Board of Appeals decision for a failure to name a necessary party. A very brief history of this case. Ms. Frace was cited by the zoning administrator for a shed on her property that was purportedly not in compliance with the zoning board code. She appealed that decision to the Board of Zoning Appeals. That appeal was denied, and within 30 days, she filed a writ petition to the Fairfax County Circuit Court seeking review of the Board of Zoning Appeals decision. The zoning administrator intervened by agreed order and filed a motion to dismiss for failure to name a necessary party. That motion was granted. It's our position, and what we will argue today, and for the reasons that we will set forth, that this was an error. For the simple fact that Ms. Frace filed her petition pursuant to 15.2.2314, specifically as it dictates it be filed. That first paragraph of 15.2.2314 states that the petition shall be styled in re the date of the decision of the Board of Zoning Appeals and the locality name, specifying the grounds on which aggrieved within 30 days after the final decision of the Board. This is exactly how Ms. Frace styled her petition. However, she did not serve the Board of Supervisors, which is the governing body. If you go down to the third paragraph of 15.2.2314, that paragraph says in the two last sentences that the governing body, the landowner, and the applicant before the Board of Zoning Appeals shall be necessary parties to the proceedings. While we concede that the Board of Supervisors is a necessary party that was not served, we believe there's a large distinction between this failure to serve and the motion brought by the county, which was a failure to name a necessary party. I think this distinction is particularly important when you look at the language of that first paragraph that states very clearly how this case should be captioned and how it should be styled. This first paragraph very clearly says that you only need to say in re the date of the decision of the Board of Zoning Appeals and locality name. There is nothing in this provision that provides that you need to name the defendants in that section. And to the extent that, yes, we understand, you do need to serve the Board of Supervisors, this is not the motion that was made. If you look at the record, I believe it's at 74 in the transcripts of the court's decision, they cite this failure to serve as the basis for dismissing the motion. But again, we would argue that's the court interjecting or connecting the dots of sorts, this failure to serve, which was not the motion that was brought by the county. It's a very specific motion on a failure to name, and that is separate from this issue of a failure to serve. Now, we would further note, with respect to this issue of failing to serve, there's some ambiguity in the statute. There's some confusion, and for two reasons. The first is that when you look at the first paragraph, it says within 30 days, the only thing that it's saying in that particular paragraph is that you need to file this petition, styled in that certain way, specifying the grounds which aggrieved. Then it's not until the third paragraph down that there is this discussion of who the necessary parties are. So I think one of the first issues of confusion is whether that necessary party has to be named within 30 days. It could be argued, and what we believe, that if that was clear, the legislation could have put that information, right next to the other information in the first paragraph, which discusses what needs to happen within 30 days to file a petition. And the second issue that has caused some confusion and some ambiguity is this issue of the governing body. Within the language of the 15.2.23.14, there's no definition of the governing body. It is the Board of Supervisors, but you have to go to 15.1.102 to get that information. And as you can see, for example, in this case, where the governing body wasn't named, in the Honorable Judge Bellow's case from the Circuit Court in Fairfax County, there was a similar issue where, again, the petitioner named the incorrect body as the governing body. And even if you look in the record, I believe that it's at page, record at 35, the exhibits used by the county in their motion to dismiss show yet another petitioner who filed a suit against the Board of, I believe it was Planning and Zoning Department, as opposed to the Board of Supervisors. So you've got this issue where the legislation, it appears, attempted to clarify who the governing body is, but it's leading to more confusion because the governing body being the Board of Supervisors, which in practice really has nothing to do with the case. In practice, it's not something that would logically flow that you need to include the Board of Supervisors, who's had no, you know, relation to the case. And further to that point is when you look at who will be prejudiced by this, it's most certainly and unfairly more so the aggrieved landowner than the county, because, for example, in this particular case, the zoning administrator intervened. This is a zoning administration decision that was appealed. Likely the zoning administrator who would be the one to do the litigation. The fact that the Board of Supervisors was not served, it's a technicality. It's something that would not really affect the outcome of the case. It would be affecting the outcome of the case is, you know, what the board of what the zoning administrator would be litigating. So, yes, I agree that it would not be. I agree that it would be problematic to make a ruling that just by serving the board of the zoning administration, for example, you've now served the Board of Supervisors. That is not what we're suggesting. What we're suggesting is for the purposes of putting on notice, if the zoning administrator is on notice and it's the same county's attorneys that would be handling the Board of Supervisors, we believe it's fair to allow the petitioner an opportunity to amend to officially serve the Board of Supervisors because, again, as a practical matter, we're probably dealing with the same officers. We are dealing with the fact that the Board of Supervisors is not actually going to be participating, likely, in this case, and the parties that are participating are already involved in this. Another thing that, you know, we would like to note is that, again, this is it's a procedural technicality. It's an issue that...
Well, counsel, let's stop there. That's the second time you've called it a technicality, and I'm going to respectfully disagree on that point. The legislature has said the Board of Supervisors is a necessary party, and I think that the Board of Supervisors, the governing body, in this instance the Board of Supervisors, clearly has a significant interest in zoning within the county. Can we agree upon that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, as I read 2314, you put the ball in play by filing the writ of certiorari. Once the judge has signed the writ, the judge orders the Board of Zoning Appeals, which is a judicial body, quasi-judicial body, to transmit the record to the circuit court. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And how long do you know the extent, the passage of time, the extent of time after the writ was signed, before it was served, and the record was transmitted? In other words, had the record been sitting in the circuit court for a significant period of time, with the board not having been made a party?
Yeah, in this particular case, yes, because the Board of Supervisors was never made a party. After the expiration of 30 days, the motion was filed to dismiss based on a failure to serve the Board of Supervisors. Is that what you were asking?
Okay, thank you.
And what I would say to that is, again, two issues is, yes, I do agree, the Board of Supervisors does have a great interest in this as a governing body. But when we look at the statute, and this is a statute that, you know, maybe more so than other statutes, lends itself to possibly being done by pro se, just aggrieved landowners who are, you know, fighting some sort of issue regarding their property. And when you look at the text of it, it doesn't say that the governing body is the Board of Supervisors. This is something that you, you know, would have to go back to another statute to understand that this is the governing body. And I think this is the confusion that's being created. And it, by this not being defined, and you're having different parties being sued by the petitioners, the Board of Zoning Appeals, the Board of Zoning Administrators, they're suing what their understanding of the governing body is, the body that seems to be governing their particular issue. And I think if you look at the Board of Supervisors case, where this court did hold in the past that if that after the return at the board, after return, the court can still bring in a necessary party. And the principle behind that is the fact that making sure that all the necessary parties get brought in.
Why doesn't the logic of Miller versus Highland County govern this proceeding, where we held that not naming the governing body within the specified time was fatal?
Well, Your Honor, I would say there's a slight distinction in that, to the extent that this is a writ petition, which has a different procedure as opposed to that case, which was a bill of complaint, a declaratory, seeking a declaratory judgment. So I think in one instance, because there is a slight difference procedurally as to what has to happen, as we just discussed, the fact that there's a writ that gets returned, which you don't have in the Miller v. Highland case. I think that is something that kind of is an important factor, because what we're looking at here is that there's this very specific way that a writ gets filed, which is different from the way that you would file a bill of complaint. And so for that reason, we would argue that that particular case isn't, you know, as closely aligned to the situation as the county has suggested. One last thing that I would just note is I think the idea of being able to amend to add a party after the 30 days is, again, it was designed prior to the change of the statute to allow for necessary parties that had not yet been identified to be brought in. And I believe that logic still follows in this instance, because there's still some confusion despite the attempts by the legislation.
Well, how could there be confusion, counsel, when in paragraph 3 they clearly say that the governing body is a necessary party?
Yes,
can there be confusion?
I understand that. I think the confusion comes in with identifying who the governing body is. If just by the face of this statute, that's not clear. It's not clear that the governing body is the Board of Supervisors, and you actually have to look to a different statute to make that clarification. And I think that's evident in, you know, for example, the three cases that we've talked about in the circuit court, where petitioners are reading that to mean different entities. And I would just also note that, again, one of our main concerns with this case is the fact that the motion to dismiss by the county was a motion to dismiss based on a failure to name a party, not on a failure to serve. So while, yes, we do concede that there was a failure to serve the Board of Supervisors, we do argue that was not the motion brought by the county.
Was the Board of Supervisors named?
No, Your Honor, Board of Supervisors.
Now, I'm not following your distinction between a failure to serve versus a failure to name. The suit brought was a failure to name a necessary party.
Yes. And the distinction that I'm making is, if you look at the first paragraph of 15.2.23.14, where it explains how this case should be filed, that's where it shows what needs to be named. I would say, for example, if Ms. Frase had served the Board of Supervisors but not named the Board of Supervisors on the complaint, then I believe that a motion to dismiss based on a failure to name would likely fail. So I think that the issue here is that there's a failure to serve. There's a failure to add the party. That's the defect that we're talking about, and that was not the defect that was alleged in the motion to fail.
Counsel, understanding your argument about the term the governing body, and there are at least two different names. Well, you've got city councils, you've got the boards of supervisors. In two counties, I think they're just simply called what's somewhat different. I'm trying to recall which. But the motion was filed by the county attorney on January 10th of 2014, saying you didn't name the Board of Supervisors. And it was a two-week motion on the Fairfax docket, and so it was heard on January 24th. Did you attempt to serve the board in the intervening 14 days?
Your Honor, no, we did not. Okay. We just moved forward with the motion. And I see my time is winding down, so I would just reiterate that the motion to dismiss based on failure to name was improper, and we ask that the decision be reversed.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Cynthia Bailey, and I'm here on behalf of the Fairfax County Zoning Administrator, Leslie Johnson. The issue in this case is whether the Frace Trust complied with the mandatory provisions of 15.2.23.14. That statute clearly provides that in the context of a BZA appeal, the governing body is a necessary party. The statute was amended by the General Assembly in 2010, and it added the very language that is at issue here today. The reason I think that the General Assembly has amended the statute is that in its wisdom it recognized that the Board of Supervisors, which is the entity that has drafted, promulgated, and enacted a zoning ordinance, is a critical entity to represent the interests of the county when a Board of Zoning Appeals has somehow interpreted or opined ruled upon the zoning ordinance. It would be incredibly prejudicial to the governing body to be left out of that appellate process.
Counsel, I agree 100% that there was wisdom behind what the General Assembly intended to do, and for the reason that you stated. The General Assembly's language, shall we say, charitably, is not a model of clarity. It indicates what the style will be, indicates that you file the writ of certiorari, and that the judge then enters it, and the court then serves the BZA in order for the record to be brought to the circuit court. Is it your argument that the board and the other necessary parties must be, A, named in the original style of the case, B, named within the body of the writ, or C, brought in some other fashion? The General Assembly has been silent on that, and I'm curious as to how you would suggest that it be done if you were the move-in party's attorney.
The statute clearly says that the governing body shall be a necessary party to the proceedings.
Absolutely.
The proceedings are initiated by the writ. So okay. I think it's clear that the governing body has to be a named party within the petition. Now, how that happens, I wouldn't argue that we should elevate form over substance. I think it probably would have been adequate if they had the style of the case and then on the face of the petition said, serve Fairfax County Board of Supervisors. Ideally, you'd like to see the caption named parties, a sub-caption, Frace Trust versus Fairfax County Board of Supervisors, and even more ideally, paragraphs that would set out who, in fact, the parties are. I think that's good practice. I think from the language of the statute, I'm not so sure all three of those would have been necessary. I think at a minimum, however, you have to name the governing body somewhere in the petition and give an indication that, in fact, they're joined from the inception.
Okay. Now, next question. If you look at page 23 of the joint appendix.
Excuse me, Your Honor.
Yes. That's the
That's a pleading prepared by your opposing counsel and filed. And if you'll note, the style is precisely what the statute calls for.
I agree.
Okay. Flip over to page 27. That's the first document. That's the next pleading filed, and it's the first one filed by the county attorney. And you'll note that the caption is not what the statute calls for. Would you agree upon that?
Well, it has the NRA language, Your Honor, in the top.
But the
style.
Entire caption is different.
Yes.
Did the county attorney do that sua sponte, or did the court order that, or how did the caption change?
Actually, Your Honor, as I recall, the circuit court required that. The court needed to have parties identified. In fact, if you look at page 25 of the joint appendix, you can see I interlineated Brace versus Ribble.
That's your handwriting?
That's my handwriting. Okay. And I was directed to do so because parties were, in fact, required for the court purposes.
Okay, so the court directed you to change the style. And that's your handwriting indicating that that was what was going to be done.
That's my recollection, Your Honor.
Who is John F. Ribble III?
He is the chair of the BZA.
Okay. And he is an individual who must be served according to the statute. Is that correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Although I would note, pursuant to the statute, he's not a party, and the BZA is not a party.
You have called him the respondent in this instance, and that's one of the things that I find so curious. Isn't a respondent a party?
Yes, Your Honor.
So you were directed by the court to name the parties. And in fact, you named a non-party and identified that individual as a party.
The problem, Your Honor, is if you look at the actual petition in detail, no parties are listed. There's no party mentioned at all in the petition. None.
Okay. Now, when you took this action, You are an assistant county attorney or a deputy county attorney. Is that correct?
Senior assistant. Yeah.
Senior assistant county attorney. Pardon.
No worries.
You work for the zoning administrator in that regard, do you not?
She is my client.
Okay. You work for the Board of Supervisors in that regard, do you not?
They are also my client.
Was the Board of Supervisors aware of what was occurring in this case? If you can tell us what communications occurred with your client, not asking you to violate the attorney-client privilege.
I have so advised the Board of Supervisors of this case, although they remain to this day not a party to this action.
Understood. And there are three entities or individuals who must be parties.
That is correct.
If the judge, instead of granting your motion to dismiss, had ordered that those statutory necessary parties be brought into the case on January 24th, 2014, would your client, the Board of Supervisors, have been prejudiced? Or had your client been prejudiced up until that day by not being officially named?
I can say, Your Honor, that there... Part of the process that occurs when the writ is returned, there have been times when we have asked the court to strike certain parts of the record. As the court is aware, the statute provides that the appellant in a BZA decision shall state the grounds upon which aggrieved. A lot of times these files are huge, and the grounds upon which aggrieved only relate to certain parts of the record. And so the Board of Supervisors might very well, at the very beginning, before the writ is actually returned, ask the court to so narrow the writ in that manner. The board would be unable to do so, again, unless they were a party to the action. So that's one instance where I could think of where perhaps they might be prejudiced.
In this particular case, though, was there prejudice?
No. Okay. However, I would invite the court, though, to look more carefully at that third paragraph, because I'm not, I think the statute is clear that only other parties may be later added to the action by the court.
Okay.
Other parties are clearly not the governing body. So I don't think the court has the authority under the express terms of the statute to add other parties than the three parties that are named as necessary parties in the preceding sentence.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
I think the only last point that I would make, Your Honors, is that clearly this case really is completely controlled by Miller versus Highland County. This statute is the same type of statute at issue in Miller, which is a purely statutory nature type of statute. This court has held before that 15.2-2285, which was the statute in Miller, and 2314, which is the statute at issue here, are essentially indistinguishable. Based on this court's ruling in Miller that this case, that in Miller, the failure to name the governing body was fatal, I think is entirely controlling in this instance as
Your opposing counsel makes the point that there's a different type of proceeding in Miller. While the statutes are virtually indistinguishable, does the nature of the pleading make a distinction?
I think that's a distinction without a difference, Your Honor. I think that the class that this court, the class of statutes, is that they are purely statutory. The General Assembly has identified a very specific remedy. The statute sets forth certain prerequisites, and the parties have to comply with those prerequisites in order to confer jurisdiction, I use that term loosely, to a court. And that wasn't complied with here, as it was not complied with in Miller. In fact, in Miller, the statute doesn't even say specifically, 2285, that the governing body shall be a necessary party. It merely provides that the appeal of a zoning decision has to be made within 30 days of the decision of the governing body. That's a lot less clear than what we have here, where the General Assembly has specifically said the governing body is a necessary party. So thank you all. If there are no further questions, I would ask that you affirm the decision of the Fairfax County Circuit Court. Thank you.
Thank you. Clerk will call the next case.
Thank you.